I solved a big snack problem in our household in a very simple way. My children love eating berries, and so do I, for not just the taste, but the vitamins and nutrients, fiber, all the good stuff we want on a regular basis. The problem? We all know what it's like to pick up a berry we just bought, and it's already growing fuzz in the fridge. So I've switched to buying frozen berries. And a favorite I look for now is Washington Red Raspberries. Did you know 90% of frozen red raspberries in the United States are grown in Washington State and mostly grown on family farms who harvest them during peak ripeness and clean and freeze on location, sealing in all that freshness, taste, and great nutritional value. So now I use frozen raspberries in our yogurt or smoothies as a sweet treat. And I love that this means I can support local American farmers and have a healthy snack for my family that withstands the test of time. You can find Washington Red Raspberries at your local grocery store or Costco. And how do you know you're getting the good stuff? Well, you just take a peek at the packaging and look for product of the U.S., and then you'll know you're on the right path. Oh, and if you want some fun recipes and more information, go to redraz.org. That's redraz.org. And you're going to find recipes, health tips, retail locations, everything you need to make frozen Washington red raspberries a regular part of your routine. Overall, it's just a smarter choice.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to Scoop, where you get the scoop on this week's news. My name is Jenna, and this is Smarter News. Well, I can't believe it. We actually reached the end of August. I feel like we just started the beginning of summer. Now we're at the end of August, and we've moved past two conventions, a multitude of really big stories that are too numerous to mention. I mean, we've really lived several lifetimes this summer, and so this is our final Monday special report for Scoop in August, and then quickly we're going to be into September. By the way, for our Labor Day Scoop, we have a special interview. We're going to give ourselves a little time to breathe this Labor Day because we're going to be hitting it so hard, quite frankly, coming back, that I thought it'd be good for our team too, that we took Labor Day as a little bit of a breather. We'll see what sort of news develops over that long weekend. And if we need to do a different sort of scoop next week, we'll do that for you. Absolutely. But I'm excited for you to see this interview. And then we're going to be quickly into fall. I mean, fall, and really so close now to the election that we've been talking about like crazy for really 2 years. So forgive us for talking so much about it, but once we're back after Labor Day, we're really, really going to be at it. I'm excited to talk to you today because we have a few stories that actually I haven't seen too many places that I'd like to just give you a heads up about. We're going to talk a little bit about politics too, of course. I'd like to clarify a few things. I don't know if you've seen some of the back and forth about military service and our vice presidential nominees. Have you seen or heard of any of the controversy around this? If you have, I hope to clarify it for you. If you haven't, I think this issue will come up as we get closer to Election Day, and so I want to prepare you for it. So there's that. We also have suddenly a new alliance in politics, and that's Robert F. Kennedy Jr. joining forces with former President Trump. And I'm going to say this again, but I'm going to say it off the top. One of the things I was looking at just over the weekend in preparation for Scoop, I was on the X feed for RFK Jr. And, you know, he's fielding all sorts of different comments about his move. And he made some sort of reference to him being the first, but not the last. What does that mean? What should we expect? We're going to talk a little bit about that. But as you know, I have been calling in fall. And that's just because I live in Texas. And there's a point in the summer, although we've had a pretty mild summer here, where the heat just, you've run out of runway. You've had enough. Everybody starts getting a little angry. And you realize it's because it's so stinking hot all the time that it's a little extra oppression in your life that you'd like to do without. So if there's even a slight breeze, even if it's like 80, you're like, is it fall? I think it's fall. This is sort of happening. So One of the news items last week was the announcement. And this actually, funny how news and life go parallel together. Sometimes you get a headline, you're like, that doesn't affect me at all. In this particular sense, I was in a Starbucks getting an iced coffee and I looked up at the menu and the pumpkin spice latte was being featured. And I said to the woman at the register, I was like, is that already here? And she said, oh yeah, it just started today. And then I got into my car. One of my colleagues, you know, texted me and said, hey, I got something to review. And it was a post about the earliest arrival of pumpkin spice lattes forever for Starbucks because it's a big seller. So it was, I was like, do I go back in? Maybe I should have gone back in. I could have content. Here's the fun fact that I wanted to share with you about Starbucks. And there's actually a real story here behind Starbucks because there's a new CEO that was announced to run the company. There's been some questions about endurance and success for the company, because if any of you have ever shopped at a Starbucks anytime over the last year, you'll realize that it's very expensive to buy a coffee drink. In fact, we use it to compare to Scoop, because your price of joining us on Scoop is likely less than a drink that you will order at a Starbucks. And we hope to create more value for you. So one subscription of Scoop for the month is $4.99. And one drink that you could get and enjoy for about 20 minutes at Starbucks is likely over $5, if not much, much higher than that. So it's a way for us to kind of bring home your investment in nonpartisan news, which we really, really, really appreciate, obviously. But this was the line in the Wall Street Journal article I'm showing on the screen that really, really got me. Here's the first line. There are at least 170,000 different ways to customize a Starbucks drink. The world's biggest coffee chain may have almost as many challenges. I'll make sure to put this in the show notes so you guys can read the article if you're interested, because it's a brand that we all know so well. It's kind of a cool read to dig in and find out, well, what are some of the challenges for the company? But 170,000 different ways to customize your Starbucks. No wonder we all have decision fatigue. And you wonder, now you want me to choose a president? I can't even figure out what the Starbucks menu is. And what are the different styles of Starbucks? 170,000. That's a fun fact to share with your friends. 170,000 different combinations. You know, sweetened, unsweetened, one pump, two pump. You guys know. Does anyone have a favorite drink at Starbucks? I'm very plain iced coffee with a splash of cream. And I'm sure they hear that, they probably roll their eyes like, this chick, not that interesting. I'm like, I like my coffee, I like my news, straightforward. All right. I want to know what's in it. All right. I actually have something more important to talk to you about other than coffee that could really impact your life, especially in the last few weeks of summer when we may not be thinking about it. And this starts off with a headline that I saw from the New York Times that was rather unexpected. You may know this name, Dr. Anthony Fauci. Did you know that Dr. Anthony Fauci, the former director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, who we've heard from and about so much over the last several years because of the pandemic, was actually in the hospital himself? We don't have any specifics as to how sick he was or how long his hospital stay was, at least at this moment, but he was put in the hospital because of the most dangerous animal on the planet, according to the CDC. And that animal is actually a mosquito. I don't know if that qualifies as an animal. Insect? Someone can correct me. The mosquito. The mosquito is considered so dangerous because it carries so many different illnesses and it makes people sick so many places in the world. And so what happened to Dr. Anthony Fauci? Apparently he tested positive for West Nile virus. Now, interesting fact I learned about West Nile virus is that when you get infected by a mosquito bite that's carrying this virus, you can get sick, you can get fever, chills, you just generally don't feel good. It tends not to be deadly. And very seldom, if not at all, does the viral level rise up high enough in your system that then you can pass it on. So when you're infected, the West Nile virus stays with you. And it definitely can make you not feel good. So this ties into another news item that I saw out of the state of Massachusetts. And for any of you listening in the state of Massachusetts, I'd be really curious to hear from you. West Nile virus in general can be found present in many, many American states. At last count, it looked like the CDC said this year, 33 states had evidence of West Nile virus cases. So it's not uncommon. But it has risen to a level in Massachusetts where the government actually issued an alert over the weekend, the last couple of days, about being aware of it and that there's likely going to be these coordinated spraying of different areas around Massachusetts to hopefully get rid of these mosquitoes. This is also going to happen in America's largest city, New York City. And they're going to spray during the hours. They're telling people in New York, the city that never sleeps, to basically not go outside while they're spraying anytime between 8:30 in the evening until 6 o'clock the next day, something like that, because they're doing this mass spraying. This has happened. We've actually watched this before happen in Texas when you get, you know, a swarm of mosquitoes that is raising some questions about these sort of viruses that can be passed along. And obviously in densely populated areas, you don't want a lot of people to be sick. We certainly don't want that to anyone to experience that, but also it can be a stress around the different services around a city. So we're going to watch that. In addition, I'm also watching something else in Massachusetts in a particular area. Again, I'll put this in the show notes because in case you want to do a little extra research, it's not just West Nile virus. It's Eastern equine encephalitis. And this sort of mosquito-borne illness that can show itself in horses can actually be very deadly to humans. There's a 33% fatality rate. And so in certain areas of Massachusetts, it's not just West Nile virus that they're looking at, but this other virus, which I actually haven't heard that much about. So just want to make you aware of this. You know, especially at this time of year, you know, you might think about it in the middle of July, but at this time of year, I think it's important to be aware that different health departments are aware of it that they're actually taking effort. So it's different just to send a note out to everyone and say, hey, you know, where's some repellent? It's something entirely different if you're going to spray different areas in order to quell the mosquito problem. So just a heads up on that. I think it's a story to watch. Apparently Dr. Fauci is fine and he believes that he was bit by a mosquito in his backyard in Washington, D.C. So we're noticing a trend along the East Coast. We'll see if it becomes a bigger story, but thought that would be interesting to put on your radar as we like to on Scoop. My son is starting at a little school and they required that we brought in sunscreen and mosquito repellent. And I thought about the mosquito repellent. I thought, you know, he doesn't really get bitten by mosquitoes. I'd rather not spray him with a bunch of stuff. I know there's some natural ways to ward off mosquitoes. And if you have any good tips, share this with us too, because there seems to be a lot of, you know, debate about how effective any of this is. So we'd rather go the natural route than something else. But now after reading this, I thought, oh, well, that was actually, maybe we do need some mosquito repellent. Maybe that's not such a bad idea. So just want to make sure that's something that you guys are aware of for your family and friends. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on in politics. Anything happened over the last couple of days? You know, anything take place? Any new developments? I mean, it's like one thing after another, isn't it? So let me just map out last week. So last week, we have 4 days of the Democratic National Convention. We have Vice President Harris accept the nomination officially on Thursday night. She delivers a speech that's about just under 40 minutes. We do a live broadcast for that. If you'd like to listen to the speech, we have a few different ways for you to do it, along with a recap that we have available of some of the more important parts and times that we pulled out some of the sound bites for you if you'd like to take a listen to that. So this really is a week for the Democrats, in that we know after a convention, whether it's a Republican or a Democratic and a national convention, that there will typically be momentum for the party because they just got a whole bunch of airtime. They just had a whole bunch of speakers speak in their behalf. These are viral clips that are going everywhere. It's flooding the airwaves. You know, this is really a moment for any campaign to try to increase momentum going into this very important period after Labor Day. Also for the rest of us, it's almost like a sigh of relief. Now we've gone through two conventions. We've seen both parties. We've seen the way that they presented themselves. And in late August, too, we know that Congress is typically back in their districts doing their district work or maybe taking vacation. We know President Biden was actually on vacation for part of the week last week. We expect him to be in Delaware this week. We expect Vice President Harris to be on the campaign trail this week. So we don't expect a lot of action coming out of Washington, D.C. So maybe this is a moment that we can just take a deep breath and think about what we're going to do for Labor Day. However, that wasn't actually the case because quickly we knew we were going to get news on Friday, and this was going to come from Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And there were all sorts of questions as to what he was going to say. And what we learned is that he was suspending his campaign, but he was doing it in a way that got even more attention than if he was to say, I'm no longer going to continue to run in this race. He said instead, not only am I suspending my campaign, but I'm going to tell you about why I'm doing it and why I'm going to be joining forces with former President Trump. His vice president nominee on his ticket, Nicole Shanahan, actually telegraphed this in an interview earlier in the week, that the campaign was going through a really deep soul-searching period of what is their plan. Because they did some very difficult work, which is to get enough signatures to get on the ballots in many different states. And remember, every state runs its elections in its own way. And therefore, every state has its own requirements about how to get on the ballot. If you're not a part of a traditional party, it's very difficult to do. And yet, the Kennedy campaign was able to figure out how to do that in many states. And surprising, at least a traditional establishment of political watchers to say, wow, they actually were able to get on the ballot. But they were also facing legal challenges from what they say, the Democratic Party, in staying on the ballot and getting tied up in all of these legal challenges. So Nicole Shanahan has said, we're trying to figure out what our next steps are and whether or not we think if we step out, we're going to help build the momentum for perhaps Vice President Harris. That's something we actually don't want to do. And we're considering what it would look like to join forces or endorse former President Trump. So this could have been an easy endorsement, let's just say a typical one, but we know we're not in a traditional election year. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. not only endorsed President Trump, but he says he's going to be joining forces with him and creating what they're referring to as a unity party. So I want you to hear a little bit of the speech that Robert F. Kennedy delivered on Friday. This is the ending of the speech. And just to give you an arc of how he talked about a variety of different topics in this speech. Again, we also have that available to you if you'd like to watch it in full. I think it's worth it. And I think that's a tip for this election season. In this time period when you're hearing so many things from so many different people, it is worth it. If you see an event that you can listen to or you'd like to watch back live, watch beginning to end, even if it's for somebody that you don't support or don't even like, because not only will you take something away from that event, seeing it beginning to end, you're going to start watching to see how different media outlets are editorializing that event. And perhaps they do it in a way that's accurate and you feel is pretty on point. Oh yeah, these were the top points of this address, or maybe it's totally different and you're going to learn something there. But being really connected to the source and very much watching something in its entirety, I think can be really helpful if you're interested in politics in America right now. So this speech covered a lot of ground. He talks about not only why he decided to turn away from the Democratic Party, how it's not the party of the past that his father and his uncle supported. He talked about media censorship and how he felt that he was constantly fighting an uphill battle to get any attention from the quote-unquote mainstream media, and that was hurting him, and that there was collusion between the media and the Democratic Party to keep out other perspectives and ideals. He then talked about chronic illness in America and how he says the FDA is supported and sponsored in part by drug companies, pharmaceutical companies, and that can't happen. And a government agency needs to be rid of that sort of money so you could have what he calls honest scientists working on behalf of the American people. And he said, after the attempted assassination of former President Trump, within the hours of that happening, that former President Trump reached out to him and they actually had a meeting. What's interesting about this for me is that I don't think that meeting, if it was really reported, got a lot of attention at all. But he said that they met in person and that they met several times with the teams, like figuring out what does this sort of alliance look like, and that he genuinely believes that former President Trump is dedicated to ridding chronic illness out of America. Robert F. Kennedy says that he believes we're poisoning our children and poisoning specifically the poor with the food choices that we're making and that we're allowing that to happen without some stricter regulations as to what we're feeding America, something so basic as what we're actually feeding each other. So this comes at the very end. It's after he got a little emotional, because you can tell this isn't an easy decision. He didn't jump on stage and, you know, it was like high-fiving. This is going to be great. I can't wait for this next move to suspend my campaign. You could tell this was a heart-wrenching decision for him. And here's how he ended it.
Joining the Trump campaign will be a difficult sacrifice for my wife and children, but worthwhile if there's even a small chance of saving these kids. ultimately the only thing that will save our country and our children is if we choose to love our kids more than we hate each other. That's why I launched my campaign to unify America. My dad and uncle made such an enduring mark on the character of our nation, not so much because of any particular policies that they promoted, but because they were able to inspire profound love for our country and to fortify our sense of ourselves as a national community held together by ideals. They were able to put their love into the intentions and hearts of ordinary Americans and to unify a national populist movement of Americans, Blacks and whites, Hispanics, urban and rural Americans. They inspired affection and love and high hopes and a culture of kindness that continue to radiate among Americans from their memory. That's the spirit on which I ran my campaign and that I intend to bring into the campaign of President Trump. Instead of vitriol and polarization, I will appeal to the values that unite us, the goals that we could achieve if only we weren't at each other's throats. The most unifying theme for all Americans is that we all love our children. If we all unite around that issue now, we can finally give them the protection, the health, and the future that they deserve.
So this is where he ends his talk, speaking about the children of America and how he, that's his life's work. So we'll see where this goes from here. I'm in particular wondering about this team, kind of this team roster idea. And part of the reason I'm thinking about that is I saw an article published, I believe it was in Newsweek. There's one in Newsweek, and I believe there was one actually in the Washington Post. Unfortunately, I couldn't find that one for you, but I'll put both what I can find specifically in our show notes as well. And it started when Vice President Harris started to become the nominee. And the thinking behind this editorial by Dan Perry, let me go ahead and see if I have it for you. Here it is. I want to share this tab instead. So this is an opinion piece. This is the one on Newsweek. Kamala Harris should pick a team, not just a vice president. This is published on August 5th. And basically, Dan Perry goes through the reasons why he thinks it would be a good idea for Vice President Harris to run a team, that it would be easier for her as a candidate who is also having just served, 4 years in office, to redefine herself and give people hope to vote for her if they can vote for a roster that you maybe are like, well, Vice President Harris, I'm not sure about her, but I really like this other person and that's part of the team. And so that would be a show of strength. This was before she decided on who her vice president would be. There was a similar piece that was written, and like I mentioned, in the Washington Post. And both of these pieces, I thought, were such a cool idea. This idea of we running an entire team. We often have to wait to hear who's going to be in someone's cabinet. Who's going to be the Secretary of Defense? Who's going to be the Secretary of State? What happens if we knew those things ahead of time, for better or for worse? And that way, the candidates are able to show the American people, this is the direction. Yes, I'm one person. I'm the leader. But we also have three equal branches of government. And the team that's going to be in the White House with me looks like this. Instead of just having a vice president who we know doesn't have as much of an impact, let's say, as a Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense, arguably doesn't have as much impact. So that concept has really sat with me over the last couple of weeks because I thought it's such an interesting idea. I don't know if the Trump team was looking at something similar or they're seeing something in their own polling to wonder, do we have a chance to gather some additional voters if we show that we have a more diverse ticket of different thinkers and different people before Election Day? And that one of you asked this question about, and I think it's Lola. You said this, Lola, do you think President Trump will get a bump from RFK Jr. joining him? I think it'll be interesting to see. I'm not a huge fan of polls because they're a snapshot of the past, but we can see how RFK Jr. was polling ahead of this, and we're going to see what happens after the announcement. So we'll have an idea. Do his supporters feel inspired enough to then transfer their vote to Donald Trump because they believe RFK Jr. is going to be a very important central part of that administration. Is that enough? And do we get announcements over the next several weeks that could also bring some other people into being curious about the Trump campaign? We may see something similar for Harris. And so I think this might be something new to watch in this election cycle that we haven't necessarily seen, because both candidates have weaknesses that we've talked about. Both are known entities. It's not like you're coming in with brand new ideas. It is true that over the last week or so, the media has tried to position Vice President Harris as, well, no one knows who she is. I actually disagree with that. I think the American people have seen the Biden administration for 4 years. They may not know everything about her, but they understand that she's vice president. It's not like this is a brand new name. I know they want to position her. Democrats want to position her that way. And we had 4 years of former President Trump. So you guys know, you know what this is all about. So do we actually see something that brings some new energy to both of these tickets because of that weakness? Brooke had this question: how can a candidate for a national election only be on the ballot in some states? This is a great reminder, Brooke, that the Constitution, by the way, didn't know any of this until I started covering politics. So can we just be clear on that? Some people rattle this stuff off like, oh yeah, of course this is what happened. No, if you don't use this information, you forget about it. And for me, I'm able to review it every couple of years. I still have to learn the civics of America. It can be very complicated. You know, how does a bill get passed? What does this all look like? The Constitution stipulates that every state runs their own federal election. So that's why in different states, you know, I may have a mail-in ballot option or vote absentee or have different requirements than you. It's because our states are going to set up the election differently, and it's completely within the right of that state to do so, which is why certain candidates will be on a ballot in some states and won't be on a ballot in others if they're not part of the major parties. Because for all the states, being part of the major parties is way easier to get on the ballot. There's an expectation that you're going to be on it. So this is why Kennedy is likely to appear on some ballots and not others. And in some cases, he can remove his name from a ballot and maybe not others at this point in time. This is why it's going to look a little different. And we're going to be hopscotching around a little bit the country about what things look like. Voting is going to start soon. Within the next like 2 weeks, we're going to get some early voting that can start. People can start sending in their ballots. And this is all because it's different states. So we'll see. We'll see what the impact is of this. And we'll see now too, is this the start of something new? Meaning, are we going to see former President Trump announce more people to be part of his team? Is he going to be running a full ticket, even though he's the one on the ballot that you have to vote for? Or are they going to watch and see how this works out? And perhaps maybe this is just a one-off, and we'll see how active RFK Jr. is after this week. That'll tell us something. In this initial aftermath, he's getting a lot of press and he's going for it, but we'll see what does this look like in the next several weeks. We have several things to look forward to, because we know come September 10th is when there's a debate scheduled between Vice President Harris and former President Trump. We also expect a ruling from the New York judge that was overseeing the quote unquote hush money trial against former President Trump. He was convicted in that case, but the Supreme Court ruling on presidential immunity may now change. It definitely has already changed things, because the judge was going to sentence former President Trump, but he decided not to because of the new ruling. He needs to review the case and see, can he continue on with sentencing, or does the new law put in place alter the trial enough that we saw to require a retrial of former President Trump? So we're going to get that, we expect in early September. So we have a lot of things that, I mean, we think we know what's going on with this race. We have a lot of things that could be very disruptive. So let me just talk to you a little bit about the vice presidential nominees. There's been a lot of talk about the military service for both of these men, J.D. Vance and Tim Walz. And before I get into this, let's just establish a couple of things. Number one, so few Americans choose to serve their country. So few Americans choose to do that. So those that choose to do that truly are in a different category. And both of these men chose to do that. They had different reasons for it. They had completely different lives, but they both chose to serve the country, and that's a part of their story. And we want to honor and respect that. It was also very key for them getting an education. And the GI Bill was helpful to both of them, who came from very rural areas, in figuring out their next steps as professionals. And whoever wins when it comes to Vice President Harris or former President Trump, whoever's going to serve as vice president is going to have military experience. That's interesting. So both tickets chose somebody with military experience to be in that position. And so whoever wins, we're going to have somebody with some sort of military experience in that role. So I want to set that on the offset, because it's important to sort of set the table with this conversation. Tim Walz served as part of the National Guard for 24 years, and J.D. Vance served as part of the Marines. They actually served roughly at the same time. Tim Walz has a longer career. He served for 24 years. J.D. Vance served for a few different several years before he continued on with his education as a young person. I found it in both cases to be very curious that both men don't talk a ton about it. There's not a ton of depth. When J.D. Vance was talking at the Republican National Convention, he mentioned his military service, but he like didn't go into it at all. And for me, that's a super red flag. Like, why? Why are you not talking about your military service? I want to know more about that. And then I found online, actually, it was very difficult to find out more. Now, what's the deal here? So then I read Hillbilly Elegy just over the last several weeks, and now I have a better understanding. So he served in the Marines, and I shouldn't say served. Once a Marine, always a Marine. To all our Marines out there. So he served in the Marines. He deployed to Iraq in 2005, and he served in a role that is particularly of interest to Smarter News, because it had to do with the media and journalism. He served as a military journalist. So that means he would, you know, write profiles about different people that were serving. In some cases, he could go out into different areas with those that were in combat, but he himself was not in combat. And I've noticed this from other veterans too, that if they haven't participated in combat, they're not going to give you a detailed explanation of what they did in the military, because they don't want to give the impression often that they did something like that when they didn't, when they served in a different role. He also served as sort of a public affairs media relations role on base back in the United States. So he has an interesting point of view, I'm sure, on the American media, because he interacted with the American media during a wartime. And then he served in a very unique role while being deployed to a war zone, but he himself did not participate in combat. Tim Walz did not deploy to a war zone. He did not deploy to Iraq or Afghanistan. This has been a little bit of a point of contention because of some of the phrases or the ways that his service has been described. He did deploy to national disasters, and he ended up leaving around 2004 because he decided after 20 plus years that he was going to pursue politics. And that's when he started to run for Congress. There's a little bit of a rub here on how he describes his service. And admittedly, it wasn't until I saw this AP write-up this weekend that it became more clear in my mind. As some of you may know, my husband's a veteran. So when it comes to some military stories, I have some invaluable insight, a source in my household. And I was asking him about this question about title and rank, because there seems to be some sort of disagreement as to the rank or the title that Tim Walz held. And in some cases, people are really upset about this, and I didn't understand why. Let me go ahead and read this. This is actually a good way to summarize it from the Associated Press. This is a quote. "I'm a retired command sergeant major," Walz said in 2006 as he campaigned to unseat the six-term Republican incumbent in Minnesota's 1st congressional district. But that statement was not true. Walz served briefly as a command sergeant major, but that was not the rank he held at retirement. It is not clear whether Walz repeated the exact claim after he won the House race, but he did not object when colleagues put the honorific before his name during House debates to underscore his gravitas on military matters. The distinction, serving as a command sergeant major but not retiring in that position, may seem minor to civilians, but to those in uniform, it is not. Well, I fell right into that category because I was like, command sergeant major versus master sergeant. I mean, they sound sort of similar. You know, I had no idea. So not only did I have an explanation of someone in my household, then reading the Associated Press piece, then going back to my husband and saying this, and I'm sharing this with you because I think it is something that most people would not even realize that this would be an issue. And so Here's what seems to have happened. So Tim Walz served as a command sergeant major, which is a big promotion, and it is a big honor. And you can serve in that role without actually getting the title. So I could serve in the role and have to go through a series of, let's say, training sessions in order to fully assume that title and then be able to retire with that rank. So I can work in the position, but not officially have it. So think about it this way. Let's say I was a Stanford medical student and I was 3 years into the Stanford medical program. And I could say, well, I've served as a doctor, but I didn't graduate from the program. I didn't get the degree. That's kind of what we're talking about here. You could say, well, I served as CEO, but I didn't go through the certain qualifications to actually make me the CEO. Does this start to kind of make sense? There's a way of saying, well, okay, if you went to a medical program and you worked as a doctor, but you hadn't actually become a doctor, graduated as a doctor, to some of us, that would be a big deal. We would say, wow, that's amazing. You went to Stanford Medical School and you had all that training, but the person's not an official doctor. And that might affect whether or not you went to them for care. In the same way, this is Tim Walz serving as a command sergeant major, but he retired as a master sergeant, which is underneath that rank, because he didn't do what he needed to do in order to retire at the higher rank. He kind of left midstream from that rank. So he was able to experience the job without actually having the full title. To those in the military, that actually is a big deal because no one's confused about rank when you're actually in the military. To those of us who are civilians, that's something that we don't interact with at a regular basis. So I thought that would be helpful to talk to you about. I think in both of these cases, the military service will become something that I expect to hear more about. And if there's a debate in the future between vice presidential nominees, I wanted you to have a little bit of a background, but I hope this is helpful in kind of figuring things out. As of this weekend, the Minnesota governor's office still has some of the wording that's a little bit confusing in his bio, and it makes it's insinuating that he's a command sergeant major. But he never officially had that rank. And so we saw that the DNC made a few changes to his bio and some of the wording has changed, but in some of the other cases it hasn't. And so is that a nefarious conspiracy to mislead people? Is it someone that was trying to write a biography that they weren't totally aware of the distinction? Is it an honest mistake? It didn't seem that Tim Walz in his convention speech tried to make his career bigger or different than it was. We're not seeing, besides the example the Associated Press mentioned in 2006 and some of these references afterwards, you know, we're not seeing him repeat something on the campaign trail every day that people are taking issue with. I think it's important to give some grace there. So is this an honest mistake? Is it something that needs some clarification? Is it something we're going to see more about? We'll see, but hopefully that gives you a little bit. And I know a deeper dive in military ranks than we maybe expected today. But to me, I was actually really fascinated to learn that. I had no idea that someone could serve in the military in a higher role, but not actually assume that role officially, and therefore not actually retire at that role. I had no idea. So that's something that's unique to the military and something that I think is important. So wanted to flag it for you. All right, we're going to finish up here. Speaking of the military, just want to look overseas real quick. As I mentioned, one of the things that brings these two tickets together, very different presidential tickets, is we have two vice presidential candidates with experience in the military. And we know that this question about foreign policy and engaging with foreign countries, diplomacy, and military strength will always become an issue in a campaign and become a hot topic of debate. We have several wars that we're continuing to watch, and something notable today. So we saw an attack from Russia today in Ukraine that Ukrainian's president described as one of the largest attacks that they've seen in the entire war, sending these drones and missiles into Ukraine. A lot of these drones are made in Iran, and we're seeing that axis of power between Russia and Iran, sending these drones that are unmanned, that are just crashing into different places. Apparently, this attack happened during the morning commute on Monday, and several people were killed. So there's an escalation there. We also saw an escalation in the Middle East, an exchange of fire between Israel and Hezbollah, a terrorist group backed by Iran that lives in Lebanon. is operating in Lebanon, which is a different front in the war between Israel and Hamas, another terrorist group. The ceasefire talks that we've discussed so much over the last several weeks ended this weekend without any movement. There seems to be some real momentum, or so it was described at the beginning of last week, but nothing to speak of right now for a hostage release or any end of the fighting. And then also in Germany this weekend, there was an attack by a suspected terrorist that police say was linked to ISIS. ISIS also took responsibility for the attack. And we just discussed this last week that the Wall Street Journal had a big piece about the resurgence of ISIS in Syria. And according to initial reports, and those, we have to be careful with those because over the next several days, we'll learn more. This individual, a man in his 20s, was apparently a asylum seeker or a refugee from Syria who was living in Germany. And so there's a couple pieces of that puzzle that we're starting to bring together that could be part of the bigger story that we talked about, which is, hey, there was all these references to, you know, a potential ISIS-related attack on a Taylor Swift concert. Easy to sort of brush that off. But is there something else going on here, specifically in Europe, where we're wondering, is there a way that this terrorist group is starting to regroup while we're focused on so many other things? So these are a couple of hotspots. We're going to need to keep an eye on this. And today is an important day in American history. We talked about the withdrawal of Afghanistan by America. And we know we're going to be marking 3 years since that took place. Today in history is when that awful attack happened at the airfield where 13 service members were killed by a suicide bomber. You know, where I previously worked, one of the editorial guidances was to not call it a suicide bomber because that seems to suggest it's a suicide, meaning that it's about the person that did the bombing, and that we should instead use the term homicide bomber because it's really about killing other people. We know 100 plus Afghans were killed in this event. 13 American service members were killed. And it remains, you know, a moment, I think, for all of us, likely, that we remember in the news. We may not remember everything, but that particular period of time in 2021 with the withdrawal of Afghanistan and the images from that time are incredibly salient. So it's a good reminder about service to America and these service members who put their lives on the line because they believe in the country. And as we're navigating this period that feels so politically heavy, you know, isn't that ultimately the question we're arriving at? How do we make America? How do we come to a place in America where we all feel like this country is worth the ultimate sacrifice? And that's what we're really talking about. And we have people all over the world that are putting their lives on the line for this. I'm going to mention this because I do want you to know, if you see things come across your desk, I know all our desks look a little different. It could be our phone in our hand on a commute home and on a bus. It could be that we're listening to the radio or watching some sort of show streaming online. You know, in case you hear anything about this, I do think it is, when I saw some images come from Arlington, I didn't know if they were real, so I wanted to check. So former President Trump is at Arlington Cemetery, paying tribute to these service members today. Typically, the military, even the military cemeteries, will not allow any sort of politics to take place. So I thought it was really remarkable, quite frankly, that you had a former president and a presidential candidate who was at Arlington paying tribute to these service members. As I mentioned to you, it is true, President Biden is on vacation. He's going to be in Delaware over the next week. And Vice President Harris is on the campaign trail. The White House did issue a statement about this, but there's no official representative that I know of who is at Arlington with former President Trump. So that you have two different ways that both of these leaders are handling this particular day. And we would hate for anyone's death to be politicized, but we already know that has taken place with this. And we can't know the hearts of any of our leaders. You know, former President Trump could really want to be there. It also is true that this is a part of his campaign that he wants to underscore. We had the parents of these service members at the Republican National Convention speaking out on behalf of President Trump, blaming President Biden for their children's deaths. It was a very powerful moment that took place in that convention. So this is important to the Trump campaign, because this is how they are trying to show a difference in leadership. And you're having the Biden administration and the Harris campaign take a different stance because this is a political liability for them. So they're trying to recognize the day and also keep a little distance from it as well. We'll see if this has any sort of lasting impact or comes up again at a future debate or on the campaign trail further. But hopefully that kind of gives a broad vision of today while we also honor those very young people that were doing their best to help people that were truly in need and lost their lives in service to the country. And a great reminder too of just how many of our soldiers made the ultimate sacrifice in Afghanistan and Iraq over the years and how special it is to make that choice to serve your country. It's a really, really special thing to do. And it's not lost on us here at Smarter News. So we'll continue to follow all these developing stories and we'll see you after Labor Day. I hope you're able to have a little time away, maybe a little time for summer reflection, a little time for fall vision. We'll maybe do a little vision boarding. Think about, you know, what is the back half? This is really, we're getting towards the end of 2024. You know, what do the next couple of months look like? None of us really know, but I'm glad to spend this time together with you. Thank you for spending some time for quick, concise, nonpartisan news. That's our mission at Smarter News. And our whole goal and hope is that we help you navigate this time and return news to a service as it was intended to give you access to all the information so that you can make up your own mind and live whatever story that you choose. That's what America is really about, and that's what a free press is about supporting. So have a great week, and I'll see you after Labor Day. Have a great day, guys. Bye. Thank you for believing in quick, concise, nonpartisan, smarter news. Every time you join us or share or save our content, you help us build a solution in news, and we are so grateful. We have a few other ways you can support our mission, from joining our insider community Scoop, to shopping our gear at our Smarter Shop, to just telling a friend. The best way to do any of this is to visit smarternews.com or follow us at Smarter News on social media. Don't worry, we put all of this in the captions so it's easy for you. Plus, we added our email just in case you want to drop us a note. We always love hearing from you. Thank you for helping us deliver news smarter.